with spiritual combat and government of the tongue. In order to acquire the practice of silence, consider frequently the great benefits which arise therefrom and the evils and dangers of talkativeness. Love this virtue, and in order to acquire the habit of it, keep silence occasionally, even at times when thou mightest lawfully speak, provided this be not to thine own prejudice or to that of others. And thou wilt be greatly helped to this by withdrawing from the society of men, for in the place of this thou wilt have the society of angels, saints, and of God himself. Lastly, remember the combat which thou hast in hand, that seeing thou hast so much to do, thou mayest the more willingly refrain from all superfluous words. Chapter 25. That in order to fight successfully against his enemies, the soldier of Christ must avoid as much as possible all perturbation and disquiet of mind. When we've lost our peace of mind, we should do our utmost to recover it. Neither is there any accident of life which should reasonably have power to deprive us of that peace, or even to trouble it. Over our own sins we have indeed cause to mourn deeply, but our sorrow, as I've shown more than once, should be calm, and in like manner, without any disquiet, but with a holy feeling of charity, should we compassionate other sinners and weep, at least inwardly, over their offenses. As to other sad and trying events, such as sickness, wounds, or loss of dearest friends, pestilence, fire, war, or such like evils, though these, being painful to nature, are for the most part shunned by the men of this world, yet may we, by divine grace, not only desire, but even love them, as just chastisements upon the wicked, and occasions of virtue to the just. For therefore does our Lord God take pleasure in sending them, and thus, borne forward by his will, we shall pass with a calm and quiet spirit through all the bitterness and contradictions of this life. And be assured that all disquiet on our part is displeasing in his sight, for of whatever kind it be, it is never free from imperfection, and always springs from some evil root of self-love. Keep, therefore, a sentinel always on the watch, who, as soon as he shall discern the approach of anything likely disquiet or disturb thee, may give thee a signal to take up thy weapons of defense. And consider that all these evils and many others of a like kind, though outwardly they appear to be such, are not indeed real evils, nor can they rob us of any real good, but are all ordered or permitted by God for the righteous ends of which we've spoken, or for others most wise and holy, although beyond our power to discern. So may the most untoward accident work for us much good, if we do but keep our souls in peace and tranquility. Otherwise, all our exercises will produce little or no fruit. Besides, when the heart is unquiet, it is always exposed to manifold assaults of the enemy, and moreover, in such a state we are incapable of discerning the right path and the sure way of holiness. Our enemy, who above all things hates this peace, because the Spirit of God dwells and works marvelously therein, often seeks in a friendly disguise to rob us of it, by instilling into our hearts sundry desires which have a semblance of good, but their deceitful nature may be detected by this test among others, that they rob us of our peace of mind. Therefore, to avert so great an evil, when the sentinel gives notice of the approach of some new desire, on no account give it entrance into thy heart, until with a free and unbiased will thou hast first presented it to God, and confessing thine ignorance and blindness, hast earnestly prayed to him for light to discern whether it comes from him or from the enemy. Have recourse also, if possible, to the judgment of thy spiritual father. And even if the desire should be from God, do not begin to carry it into execution until thou hast mortified thine own eagerness, for a work preceded by such mortification will be far more acceptable to him than if performed with all the impetuosity of nature. Nay, sometimes it may be that the mortification will please him better than the work itself. Thus, casting from all evil desires and not venturing to carry even good desires into effect till thou hast first repressed thy natural impulses, thou shalt keep the fortress of thy heart in security and peace. And in order to preserve it in perfect peace, thou must also guard and defend it from certain inward self-reproaches and remorseful feelings, which are sometimes from the devil, though as they accuse thee of some failing, they seem to come from God. By their fruits shalt thou know whence they proceed. If they humble thee, if they make thee diligent in well-doing, if they take not from thee thy trust in God, then receive them with all thankfulness as coming from him. But if they discourage thee, if they make thee fearful, distrustful, slack and feeble in good deeds, then be assured they come from the enemy. Give no ear to them, but continue thine exercise. And as anxiety at the approach of adverse events springs up even more frequently in our hearts, thou hast two things to do in order to ward off this assault. The first is carefully to search out and discover to what these events are adverse, whether to the soul or to self-love and self-will. For if they be adverse to thine own will and to self-love, thy chief and greatest enemy, they are not to be called adverse, but to be esteemed special favors and helps from the Most High God, to be received with a joyful heart and with thanksgiving. And though they should be adverse to the soul, thou oughtest not on this account to lose thy peace of mind, as I will show thee in the following chapter. The second is to lift up the heart to God, accepting all things blindly from the hand of his divine providence, ever full of manifold blessings beyond thy power to comprehend, and seeking to know nothing further. Chapter 26. What we should do when we are wounded. When thou feelest thyself wounded from having weakly, or it may be even willfully and deliberately, fallen into some sin, be not over fearful or over anxious, but turn instantly to God, saying, Behold, O Lord, what of myself I have done, and what indeed could be expected of me but falls. And then, after a short pause, humble thyself in thine own eyes, mourn over the offense committed against thy Lord, and without falling into discouragement, be full of indignation against thy evil passions, especially that which has occasioned thy fall. Then say, Nor even here, Lord, should I have stopped if thy goodness had not withheld me. And here give thanks to him and love him more than ever, wondering at the excess of his mercy, who, when thou hadst so deeply offended him, stretched out his right hand to save thee from another fall. Lastly, say with great confidence, in his infinite compassion, Forgive me, Lord, for thine own sake. Suffer me not to depart from thee, nor to be separated from thee, nor evermore to offend thee. And this done, do not sit down to consider whether God has pardoned thee or not, for this is nothing else but pride, restlessness of mind, loss of time, and under color of various fair pretexts, a delusion of the devil. But committing thyself unreservedly to the merciful hands of God, pursue thine exercise as if thou hadst not fallen. And if thou shouldst fall and shouldst be wounded many times in a day, repeat what I've taught thee with no less faith the second, the third, and even the last time than the first, and despising thyself and hating the sin more and more, strive to lead henceforth a life of greater watchfulness. This exercise is very displeasing to the devil, both because he sees it to be most acceptable to God, and also because he's enraged to see himself overcome by one over whom he had been at first victorious. And therefore, he seeks, by many artful wiles, to make us relinquish it, and through our carelessness and lack of vigilance, he is but too often successful. The harder, therefore, this exercise may seem to thee, the greater violence must thou do to thyself, renewing it repeatedly even after a single fall. And if after any fault thou feel uneasy, distrustful, and confused in mind, the first thing to be done is to recover thy peace and quietness of mind, and with it thy confidence in God. Armed with these, turn again to the Lord, for thy uneasiness on account of thy sin arises not from the consideration of the offense against God, but of the injury to thyself. To recover this peace, discard entirely from thy mind the thought of thy fall, and set thyself to meditate on the unspeakable goodness of God, how he is beyond measure ready and willing to forgive every sin, how grievous soever, calling the sinner by manifold ways and means to come to him, that he may unite him to himself in this life by his grace in order to his sanctification, and in the life to come by his glory for his eternal beatification. And having quieted thy mind by these and like reflections, turn thy thoughts once more to thy fall, according to the instructions given thee above. Again, at the time of sacramental confession, to which I exhort thee to have recourse frequently, call to mind all thy falls, and with renewed sorrow and indignation at the offense against God, and renewed purpose never again to offend him, disclose them with all sincerity to thy spiritual father. Chapter 27. Of the means employed by the devil to assail and deceive those who desire to give themselves up to the practice of virtue, and those who are already entangled in the bondage of sin. Thou must know that the devil is intent upon nothing but our ruin, and that he does not use the same method of assault with all persons. In order then to make known to thee some of his modes of attack, his stratagems and devices, I will set before thee several different conditions of men. Some remain in the service of sin without a thought of escape. Some would fain be free but never make the attempt. Others think they're walking in the way of holiness while they're wandering far from it. And lastly, some, after having attained unto holiness, fall into deeper perdition. We will discourse separately of each. Chapter 28. Of the Devil's Assaults and Devices Against Those Whom He Holds in the Bondage of Sin. When the devil holds a man in the bondage of sin, his chief care is to blind his eyes more and more, and to avert from him everything which might lead to a knowledge of his most wretched condition. And not only does he, by instilling contrary thoughts, drive from him all reflections and inspirations which call him to conversion, but by affording him ready opportunities, he makes him fall into other and greater sins. Hence, the thicker and darker waxes his blindness, the more desperate and habitual becomes his course of sin. And thus, from blindness to deeper blindness, from sin to fouler sin, his wretched life will swirl on even unto death, unless God, by his grace, should intervene to save him. The remedy for one in this unhappy condition is to be ready to give diligent heed to the thoughts and inspirations which call him from darkness to light, crying with all his heart to his Creator, O Lord, help me speedily, leave me not any longer in the darkness of sin. And let him not fail to repeat this cry for mercy over and over again in these or in like words. If possible, let him have immediate recourse to some spiritual guide, and ask aid and counsel, so that he may be delivered from the power of the enemy. And if he cannot do this at the moment, let him fly with all speed to the crucifix, prostrating himself before it and asking mercy and aid also from the Mother of God. On this speed does the victory depend, as thou wilt learn in the next chapter. Chapter 29. Of the arts and stratagems by which he holds in bondage those who, knowing their misery, would fain be free, and how it is that our resolutions prove so often ineffectual. When a man begins to perceive the evil of his way of life, and to desire to change it, the devil often deludes and overcomes him by such means as these. Presently, presently, crass, crass, tomorrow, tomorrow, as the raven cries. I wish first to consider and dispatch this business, this perplexity, that I may then be able to give myself with greater tranquility to spiritual things. This is the snare in which many men have been and are still daily entangled. And the cause of this is our own negligence and heedlessness, seeing that in a matter touching the honor of God and the salvation of the soul, we neglect to seize instantly that effectual weapon, now, now. Wherefore, presently, today, today. Wherefore, tomorrow, saying each one to himself. Even supposing this presently and this tomorrow should be granted to me, is it the way of safety and of victory to seek first to be wounded and to commit fresh disorders? Thou seest then that the way to escape this snare, and that mentioned in the preceding chapter, and to subdue the enemy, is to yield prompt obedience to all heavenly thoughts and inspirations. Prompt obedience, I say, and not mere resolutions, for these are often fallacious, and many have been deceived thereby from various causes. First, because our resolutions are not founded upon self-distrust and trust in God, but our excessive pride, whence proceeds this blindness and delusion, prevents our perceiving it. The light to see and the medicine to cure it both proceed from the goodness of God, who suffers us to fall, that he may recall us thereby from self-confidence to confidence in him alone, and from pride to self-knowledge. Thy resolutions, therefore, to be effectual, must be steadfast, and to be steadfast, they must be free from all self-confidence and humbly based on confidence in God. Secondly, when we're making our resolutions, we dwell on the beauty and excellence of virtue, which attracts our will, slack and feeble as it is. But when confronted by the difficulties which attend the attainment of virtue, the weak and untried will fails and draws back. Learn, therefore, to love the difficulties which attend the attainment of all virtues more than even the virtues themselves, and use these difficulties in various measures to strengthen thy will, if thou desirest in good earnest to acquire these virtues. And know that the more courageously and lovingly thou shalt embrace these difficulties, the more speedy and complete shall be thy victory over self and all thine other enemies. Thirdly, in our resolutions we too often look rather to our own advantage than to the will of God and the acquisition of the virtues he requires of us. This is frequently the case with resolutions made in times of great spiritual joy or acute sorrow, when we seem unable to find any relief but in a resolution to give ourselves wholly to God and to the practice of virtue. To avoid this snare, take care in times of spiritual consolation to be very cautious and humble in thy resolutions, especially in thy vows and promises. And in tribulation, let thy resolution be to bear thy cross patiently according to the will of God, nay, to exalt it, refusing all earthly, and if so be even all heavenly, consolation. Let thy one desire, thy one prayer, be that God would help thee to bear all adverse things, keeping the virtue of patience unstained, and giving no displeasure to the Lord. Chapter 30 of a delusion of those who imagine they are going onward to perfection. Our malignant foe, thus repulsed in his first and second assault and stratagem, has recourse to a third, which is to turn away our attention from the enemies who are close at hand to injure and assail us, and to fill us with resolutions and desires after higher degrees of perfection. Hence, we are continually being wounded, yet we pay no attention to our wounds, and looking upon these resolutions as already fulfilled, we take pride in them in various ways. And while we cannot endure the least thing or the slightest word which crosses our will, we waste our time in long meditations and resolutions to endure the acutest sufferings on earth or in purgatory for the love of God. And because our inferior part feels no repugnance at these things in the distance, we flatter ourselves, miserable creatures as we are, into the conceit that we belong to the class of patient and heroic sufferers. To avoid this snare, resolve to fight manfully against the enemies who are close at hand and actually waging war against thee. Thou wilt thus discover whether thy resolutions are real or imaginary, weak or strong, and so thou wilt go on to virtue and perfection by the beaten and royal road. But against enemies who are not wont to trouble thee, I do not advise thee to take up arms, unless there appear a probability of their making an attack at some future time. In this case it is lawful to make resolutions beforehand, that thou mayest be found strong and prepared. Do not, however, judge of thy resolutions by their effects, even though thou shouldst have long and faithfully exercised thyself in virtue. But be very humble with regard to them, fear thyself and thine own weakness, and trust in God, and seek his help by frequent prayer to strengthen and preserve thee from all dangers, and especially from the very slightest presumption or self-confidence. For in this case, though we may not be able to overcome some slight defects which our Lord sometimes leaves in us in order to greater humility and self-knowledge, and for the protection of some virtue, we may yet be permitted to form purposes of aspiring to higher degrees of perfection. Chapter 31 of the Devil's Assaults and Stratagems in order to draw us away from the path of holiness. The fourth device of the evil one, when he sees us advancing steadily towards holiness, is to excite within us a variety of good desires, that by this means he may lead us away from the exercise of virtue into sin. A sick person is perhaps bearing his illness with a patient will. The cunning adversary knows that by this means he may attain to a habit of patience, and he immediately sets before him all the good works which, in a different condition, he might be able to perform, and tries to persuade him that if he were but well, he would be able to serve God better and be more useful to himself and others. Having once aroused such wishes within him, he goes on increasing them by degrees till he makes him restless at the impossibility of carrying them into effect. And the deeper and stronger such wishes become, the more does this restlessness increase. Then the enemy leads him on gently and with a stealthy step to impatience at the sickness, not as sickness, but as a hindrance to those good works which he so anxiously desires to perform for some greater good. When he has brought him thus far, with the same art he removes from his mind the end he had in view, to serve God and perform good works, and leaves him only the bare desire to be rid of his sickness. And then, if this does not happen according to his wish, he is so much troubled as to become actually impatient, and so unconsciously he falls from the virtue in which he was exercising himself into the opposite vice. The way to guard against and resist this snare is to be very careful, when in a state of trial, not to give way to desires after any good work, which, being out of thy power to execute, would very probably disquiet thee. In such cases, resign thyself with all patience, resignation, and humility to the conviction that thy desires would not have the effect thou thinkest, inasmuch as thou art far more insignificant and unstable than thou accountest thyself to be. Or else, believe that God, in his surer counsels, or on account of thy unworthiness, is not pleased to accept this work at thy hand, but will rather that thou shouldst patiently abase and humble thyself under the gentle and mighty hand of his will. In like manner, if prevented by thy spiritual father, or in any other way, from attending as frequently as thou desirest to thy devotions, and especially Holy Communion, suffer not thyself to be troubled or disquieted by longings after them, but casting off all that is thine own, clothe thyself with the good pleasure of thy Lord, saying within thyself, "If the eye of divine providence had not perceived sin and ingratitude in me, I should not now be deprived of the blessing of receiving the most holy sacrament. But since my Lord thus makes known to me my unworthiness, be his holy name forever blessed and praised. I trust, O Lord, that in thine infinite loving kindness thou wilt so rule my heart that it may please thee in all things in doing or suffering thy will, that it may open before thee, so that entering into it spiritually, thou mayest comfort and strengthen it against the enemies who seek to draw it away from thee. Thus may all be done as seems good in thy sight. My Creator and Redeemer, may thy will be now and ever my food and sustenance. This one favor only do I beg of thee, O my beloved, that my soul, freed and purified from everything displeasing to thee, and adorned with all virtues, may be ever prepared for thy coming, and for whatsoever it may please thee to do with me." If thou wilt observe these rules, know for certain that when baffled in any good work which thou hast a desire to perform, be the hindrance from the devil to disquiet thee and turn thee aside from the way of virtue, or be it from God to make trial of thy submission to his will, thou wilt still have an opportunity of pleasing thy Lord in the way most acceptable to him. And herein consists true devotion and the service which God requires of us. I warn thee also, lest thou grow impatient under trials from whatever source proceeding, that in using the lawful means which God's servants are wont to use, thou use them not with the desire and hope to obtain relief, but because it is the will of God that they should be used. For we know not whether his divine majesty will be pleased by their means to deliver us. Otherwise, thou wilt fall into further evils, for if the event should not fulfill thy purpose and desires, thou wilt easily fall into impatience, or thy patience will be defective, not wholly acceptable to God, and of little value. Lastly, I would here warn thee of a hidden deceit of our self-love, which is wont on certain occasions to cover and justify our faults. For instance, a sick man who has but little patience under his sickness conceals his impatience under the cover of zeal for some apparent good, saying that his vexation arises not really from impatience under his sufferings, but is a reasonable sorrow because he has incurred it by his own fault, or else because others are harassed or wearied by the trouble he gives them, or by some other cause. In like manner, the ambitious man, who frets after some unattained honor, does not attribute his discontent to his own pride and vanity, but to some other cause, which he knows full well would give him no concern did it not touch himself. So neither would the sick man care if they, whose fatigue and trouble on his account seems to give him so much vexation, should have the same care and trouble on account of the sickness of another. A plain proof that the root of such men's sorrow is not concern for others or anything else, but an abhorrence of everything that crosses their own will. Therefore, to avoid this and other errors, bear patiently, as I've told thee, every trial and every sorrow, from whatever cause arising. Chapter 32. Of the above-named last assault and stratagem by which the devil seeks to make the virtues we have acquired the occasion of our ruin. The cunning and malicious serpent fails not to tempt us by his artifices, even by means of the very virtues we've acquired, that leading us to regard them and ourselves with complacency, they may become our ruin, exalting us on high, that we may fall into the sin of pride and vainglory. To preserve thyself from this danger, choose for thy battlefield the safe and level ground of a true and deep conviction of thy own nothingness, that thou art nothing, that thou knowest nothing, that thou canst do nothing, and hast nothing but misery and sin, and deservest nothing but eternal damnation. Entrench thyself firmly within the limits of this truth, and suffer not thyself to be enticed so much as a hair's breadth therefrom by any evil thought, or aught else that may befall thee, knowing well that these are so many enemies who would slay or wound thee shouldst thou fall into their hands. In order to acquit thyself well in this exercise of the true knowledge of thine own nothingness, observe the following rule. As often as thou dost reflect upon thyself and thy own works, consider always what thou art of thyself, and not what thou art by the aid of God's grace, and so esteem thyself as thou shalt thus find thyself to be. Consider first the time before thou wert in existence, and thou wilt see thyself to have been during all that abyss of eternity a mere nothing, and that thou didst nothing and couldst have done nothing towards giving thyself an existence. Next, consider the time since thou didst receive a being from the sole bounty of God. And here also, if thou leave to him that which is his own, his continual care of thee, which sustains thee every moment of thy life, what art thou of thyself, but still a mere nothing? For undoubtedly, were he to leave thee for one moment to thyself, thou wouldst instantly return to that first nothingness from whence thou wast drawn by his almighty hand. It is plain that in the order of nature, and viewed in thyself alone, thou hast no reason to esteem thyself or to desire the esteem of others. Again, in the life of grace and the performance of good works, what good or meritorious deed could thy nature perform by itself, if deprived of divine assistance? For considering, on the other hand, the multitude of thy past transgressions, and moreover the multitude of other sins from which God's compassionate hand has alone withheld thee, thou wilt find that thine iniquities, being multiplied not only by days and years, but by acts and habits of sin, one evil habit drawing another after it, would have swelled to an almost infinite amount, and so have made of thee another infernal Lucifer. Hence, if thou wouldst not rob God of the praise of his goodness, but cleave faithfully to him, thou must learn day by day to think more humbly of thyself, and be very careful to deal justly in this judgment of thyself, or it may do thee no little injury. For if in the knowledge of thine own iniquity thou surpass a man who in his blindness accounts himself to be something, thou wilt lose exceedingly, and fall far below him in the action of the will, if thou desire to be esteemed and regarded by men for that which thou knowest thyself not to be. If, then, thou desirest that the consciousness of thy vileness and sinfulness should protect thee from thine enemies, and make thee dear to God, thou must not only despise thyself as unworthy of any good and deserving of every evil, but thou must love to be despised by others, detesting honors, rejoicing in shame, and stooping on all occasions to offices which others hold in contempt. Thou must make no account at all of their judgment, lest thou be thereby deterred from this holy exercise. But take care that the end in view be solely thine own humiliation and self-discipline, lest thou be in any degree influenced by a certain lurking pride and spirit of presumption, which under some specious pretext or other often causes us to make little or no account of the opinions of others. And shouldst thou perchance come to be loved, esteemed, or praised by others for any good gift bestowed on thee by God, be not moved a single step thereby, but collect thyself steadily within the stronghold of this true and just judgment of thyself, first turning to God and saying to him with all thine heart, O Lord, never let me rob thee of thy honor and the glory of thy grace. To thee be praise and honor and glory, to me confusion of face. And then say mentally of him who praises thee, Whence is it that he accounts me good, since truly my God and his works are alone good? For by thus giving back to the Lord that which is his own, thou wilt keep thine enemies far off, and prepare thyself to receive greater gifts and favors from thy God. And if the remembrance of good works expose thee to any risk of vanity, view them instantly, not as thine own, but as God's, and say to them, I know not how he did appear and originate in my mind, for he derived not your being from me, but the good God in his grace created, nourished, and preserved you. Him alone, then, will I acknowledge as your true and first parent. Him will I thank, and to him will I return all the praise. Consider that next, that not only do all the works which thou hast done fall short of the light which has been given thee to know them, and the grace to execute them, but also that in themselves they are very imperfect, and fall very short of that pure intention and due diligence and fervor with which they should be performed, and which should always accompany them. If then thou wilt well consider this, thou wilt see reason rather for shame than for vain complacency, because it is but too true that the graces which we receive, pure and perfect from God, are sullied in their use by our imperfections. Again, compare thy works with those of the saints and other servants of God, for by such comparison thou wilt find that thy best and greatest are of base alloy and of little worth. Next, measure them by those which Christ wrought for thee in the mystery of his life and of his continual cross, and setting aside the consideration of his divinity, view his works in themselves alone. Consider both the fervor and the purity of the love with which they were wrought, and thou wilt see that all thy works are indeed as nothing. And lastly, if thou wilt raise thy thoughts to the divinity and the boundless majesty of thy God, and the service which he deserves at thy hands, thou wilt see plainly that thy work should excite in thee not vanity, but fear. Therefore, in all thy ways, in all thy works, however holy they may be, thou must cry unto thy Lord with all thy heart, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Further, I would advise thee to be very reserved in making known the gifts which God may have bestowed on thee, for this is almost always displeasing to thy Lord, as he himself plainly shows us in the following lesson. Appearing once in the form of a child to a devout servant of his, she asked him with great simplicity to recite the angelical salutation. He readily began, Ave Maria, gratias plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu, in mulieribus, and then stopped, being unwilling to praise himself in the words which follow. And while she was praying him to proceed, he withdrew himself from her, leaving his servant full of consolation because of the heavenly doctrine, which by his example he had thus revealed to her. Do thou also learn to humble thyself and to acknowledge thyself with all thy works to be the nothing which thou art. This is the foundation of all other virtues. God, before we existed, created us out of nothing, and now that we exist through him, he wills that the whole spiritual edifice should be built on this foundation, the knowledge that we of ourselves are nothing. And the deeper we dig into this knowledge, the higher will the building rise. And in proportion as we clear away the earth of our own misery, the divine architect will bring solid stones for its completion. And never imagine that thou canst dig deep enough. On the contrary, think this of thyself, that if anything belonging to a creature could be infinite, it would be thine unworthiness. With this knowledge, duly carried into practice, we possess all good. Without it, we are little better than nothing, though we should do the works of all the saints and be continually absorbed in God. O blessed knowledge, which makes us happy on earth and blessed in heaven! O light, which issuing from darkness makes the soul bright and clear! O unknown joy, which sparkles amid our impurities! O nothingness, which once known makes us lords of all! I should never weary of telling thee this. If thou wouldst give praise to God, accuse thyself, and desire to be accused by others. Humble thyself with all and below all, if thou wouldst exalt him in thyself, and thyself in him. Wouldst thou find him? Exalt not thyself, for he will fly from thee. Abase thyself to the utmost, and he will seek thee and embrace thee. Let us continue with our spiritual combat on the next tape.